Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Hello to all of our listeners out there, and for those of you that were able at sort of a last-minute scramble here to join us for the pre-record, we are very delighted that you're with us today as well. Your presence is always really strongly felt when I get these shows. So, my brothers and sisters, I wanted to tackle an interesting topic today, and that is the secret history of the Americas. Now, I want to tell folks out there that we are planning a mid to later January of 2010 cruise that has a limited number of openings for folks. The entire cruise, it's a five-day cruise down to the Acapulco coast and down to Mazatlan. I think it leaves out of Southern California. And on the cruise, we will give the equivalent lecture of what we would during a weekend three-day lecture. And so during the evenings, we will spend 3 hours prior to dinner and before all the fun activities of the evening starts. We'll spend 3 hours in the evening when we're out of port with lectures on the secret history of the peoples of the earth, their secret interactions with UFOs, their secret origins of some of the races, some of the secret civilizations, some secret libraries that have never before been revealed, etc. But to give you a little sneak preview, I'm going to look today at the secret history of North America, including some of its tribes. So a good place for us to start is to look at some of the indigenous peoples here on North America and see how diverse their backgrounds really are. Now, to do that, we need to go back to the days of Atlantis and the days of Lemuria. The Lemurian continent started out as 7 subcontinents, if you will, some of them separated by just a strait of water, not much more than what we currently have in the Panama Canal. But nevertheless, there were 7 distinct races called the 7 root races of Lemuria. I am in the process of preparing material for the Institute of Human Potential that will be available to everyone in November of 2009 out of Singapore. Because of Spiritual Journeys Asia, it will be producing that. But the second month of its course deals with the 144 root races of man, the ancient roots of religion, and when it was that true spirituality gave way to religion, and so forth. But the 7 root races of Lemuria yielded certain of the Native American cultures. And the first one of them was the Cree, and later the Anishinaabe. Now, the interesting thing of it is the Cree have syllabics. I hope I'm saying the word correctly, but they're little glyphs that make up their writing. And some of their chiefs are aware of where these glyphs on the ancient hunting grounds of the Cree people are still to be seen in rock crevices and caverns. They look very Sumerian. For those that are familiar to Sumerian cuneiform, which incidentally they just recently discovered near Kent, Washington State, just across the river from Oregon, they discovered a whole lot of records, and they are clearly Sumerian. I know this because one of my students brought me a piece, And I just don't have it. You know, he has it. But the point is, I was able to see the writing. And he says, "Almin, what's on the stone?" And I said, "Oh, that's Sumerian writing. I know it very well." So, you know, how did the Sumerians get here? Incidentally, how did the Egyptians get here? Because in Missouri, there's a large tomb, and I've seen some of the objects that have come out of the tomb by somebody who brought them to me and wanted me to translate portions of them, and they're Egyptian. And they come from the time soon after Princess Scotia went to Ireland. She came through a time tunnel, and she is reputedly either the daughter or the granddaughter of Nefertiti. And so as far as I can see, she is not the granddaughter but the daughter of Queen Nefertiti. And they escaped a big sort of a massacre that happened in the land. And that there's clear evidence for, because, you know, even the images of Nefertiti and Akhenaten were removed. They were totally effaced, all their statues broken. There was a total overthrow of their kingdom by the priests, who did not like their monotheistic religion to take place because it completely rendered them obsolete. So they staged a rebellion. There is evidence in Missouri that they did come there. There also is evidence in the Yucatan that the Egyptians were able to come there. How? Because there were time tunnels erected very specifically between the Yucatan and Egypt. Now, why is that? Oh, my brothers and sisters, what an interesting story. But we can't do that one as well today, so I will just tell you that currently we are taking registrations for a 3-month course of 6 days a week, little pockets of material being given in the form of audio by me, portions given of over 1,000 written pages of material, and a forum on which you can discuss it with it's a virtual lounge for the students of this institute. It's the Institute of Applied Mysticism. So the Institute of Applied Mysticism, and you should be able to find the link to that right on our website. I hope everybody has put that up, but it should be there. Otherwise, just contact our office. On the 1st of August, 2009, we start with a 3-month intensive, but made easily able to be assimilated bit by bit, spoon-fed material that is some of the deepest we have ever taught. The material comes from the God Kingdom. It will not be published anywhere else. And the material gives the secrets of the gods and their games amongst humankind, amongst many other things, because the goal of this 3-month workshop, well, it's a curriculum, is called The Science of Immortality and Incorruptibility. You will learn for example, exactly how the gods, in quotation marks, managed to stay immortal when they were not worthy of life. When they manipulated humankind, they caused major wars such as the Third World War that was totally instigated. The Fourth Reich concept comes from a future group of gods called the Anahi Asai, which are the overseers. All of this, the blood sacrifice that took place in the Yucatan, how it ties in with Montauk, Long Island, New York, how it ties in with Egypt, that is given to you during this course that starts the 1st of August. But let's go back to the tribes of North America. The syllabics, as I said, of the Cree people who came from the East. They came from Lemuria, but they came before Lemuria sank, in some way from a root language from one of those continents. And understand, Lemuria sank 4 times. as did Atlantis. We give you the changing maps of those two continents, their alphabets, their numerical systems, in the book, Secrets of the Hidden Realms. So, my brothers and sisters, when they're one of the few indigenous peoples that did, in fact, have writing, the Anishinaabe came later. But the Anishinaabe was part of the same group that the Cree originated from, but there was a separation when one part of them left and migrated into North America, and the Anishinaabe came later. Now, the Navajo, what an interesting story. As some of you may know, having visited my website, www.ancientshamanism.com, my brothers and sisters, I lived for 5 years amongst the Plains Cree and Anishinaabe. And during that time, I learned many secrets. Some of the secrets involved Custer and, you know, Little Bighorn. What really happened there? Because it wasn't Custer who made that last stand, according to the Native Americans. It was his brother. And his brother actually was persuaded to put on his coat. And Custer made his escape. And now, I've never seen the area of Little Bighorn, so I don't know what the lay of the land is. But the way that they tell it to me, there was a little river, and he escaped down the little river. He was caught and turned over to the women of the tribes. What happened to him was horrendous. I don't even want to discuss it. It could ruin everyone's day. But the reason they did that is because of a habit that he had, as many others. They scalped the women, but not their head's hair. They scalped their pubic hair, and they put it to dry in the sun across the saddle horns, the horn of the saddle. And this had spread, the horrific things that were done to the native women. And so, you know, when he was finally caught, he was turned over to the women. The other secret that they told me was the origin of the Navajo. They said that the Navajo came during, right prior to the last sinking of Atlantis, which you can find how that happened and so on, what caused it, everything in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. But right before it happened, they migrated north and they moved into Russia. This is the Navajo. They came from Lemuria. Eventually, after many of the tribes had settled not that long ago, it's possible that if I were to estimate, now they didn't tell me this, but judging by the tribes that the Navajo interacted with as they came from the north and made their way to the south, it would have been no more than about 2,000 years ago. The Navajo came down the north and said they were looking for the ancient ones that had come from Lemuria, namely the Hopi. The Hopi's history tells of how they went from island to island, because the last sinking of Lemuria was not a rapid one. And geologists have pointed this out. When they look at the rock formation at the bottom of the ocean, they can see that that whole bed around Hawaii and so on sank gradually, not quickly. There were gas tubes of about 2 inches wide and very, very long gas pipes underneath the land that ignited. And as it ignited, sinkings began. The Hopi moved from landmass to landmass to landmass west. And so did the Zuni and those who they think of as the mound builders. Now, in November, the Institute for the Research for the Study of Human Potential that I mentioned before would be bringing out in the second month, which is December, The Secret History of Man. In its first month, it brings out the translation of portions of 130 secret libraries on Earth that took me most of 2008 and most of 2007 to do. those libraries tell about who the real mound builders were of the huge geomounds in, for instance, Ohio, Kentucky, etc. They were not the Indian mound builders who subsequently started burying their dead in the side of the mounds and sort of erected a social life around the mounds. But those mound builders also came from Hawaii. And you can read in my book, I believe that it is, Hilda can help you with that at our main office, but I believe it is in A Life of Miracles, my experience with the king of the Hawaiian people, King Kanahele, known as Bumpy, and how I restored to him a sacred object from the mound builders back to Hawaii that originally was, there was contact when the Hawaiian people sought out those who had left their lands. They went up the big river, namely the Missouri River, and they went up there with their canoes and found the mound builders who they shared similar ancestors with. Well, judging by all of this, the Navajo came also from Lemuria. They went to Russia. They came across the Russian land bridge to America, which used to be a lot more prominent. And they came down looking for the Hopi, the ancient ones, the other tribe that they had cohabitated with in Lemuria. Wherever they went, and the Cree chief who told me this laughingly said, everybody just kept pointing them south because they were eating all the buffalo, and we wanted to get rid of them. But they just kept pointing them south and pointing them south, and finally they recognized the Hopi. And when they came to the Hopi, a collaboration was made. The Hopi were not warriors, but they were wisdom keepers. I have translated some of their glyphs, their petroglyphs that are on the rocks. I've been able to read them quite successfully, also those of the Anasazi. And the Hopi's glyphs speak of the closing of the cycle. It speaks of a time when the moon was substituted by something that was brought in on a large comet. It says that they are pre-lunar in their habitation of the land. That's what their geoglyphs say. They are the wisdom keepers. The Navajo are the warriors. And so it is the Navajo that said to them, we will protect you. Share with us your culture and your stories, and share with us your wisdom. And this is how they started to live together, the Navajo being the warriors to protect the lands of the Hopi. So, my brothers and sisters, let's take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back, and we'll take a look at some of the other secrets of this land.
Aline continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
Welcome back, my brothers and sisters. And so let me share with you some of the other interactions that happened on the North American continent that so few people are familiar with. We have spoken very briefly because it's part of the lectures that will be given on board ship during this January. So if you really want a fabulous Christmas present, that might be one you want to ask for. The trips itself on the ships down are not that expensive, but, you know, and then you just pay the extra bit on top that we normally would charge for a weekend workshop. However, I want to now share with you in some detail the connection between North America and Israel. After King Solomon, whom most of you know about, after King Solomon, the kingdom that he was over of the Israelites split into two. Rehobeam and Jerobeam, I believe, if I am pronouncing their names correctly, were the two sons I don't know if they were his sons, but they were the rulers of the two kingdoms. It became Judea, and the tribe of Judah and half a tribe of Manasseh became Judea, and the other became what's known as the 10 tribes of Israel. Because as you remember, there are 12 tribes of Israel. Well, the Assyrians abducted, now I'm doing this by memory, okay, and it's been a very long time since I've read this, so don't quote me as gospel on this, but I'm pretty sure it was the Assyrians. The Assyrians came, yes, I can see images in front of my head, the Assyrians. They came and they abducted the 10 tribes. Soon after that, Nebuchadnezzar, under the Babylonians, so the Babylonians' king, Nebuchadnezzar, came and abducted the Judeans, the other portion of the Israelites. Well, the prophets of these groups were warned. Now, you will remember that some of these prophets, they were mostly Levites, and the Levites were with the 10 last tribes. But Judea had their own set of prophets. And a prophet was warned that he needed to take his family immediately and travel not west to a promised land, but east across the continents. The reason was the trade winds. They would have to cross the ocean, and they needed the trade winds, which blows, if I can see the globe here in front of my face, it would blow from the northwesterly direction, and it would blow from the southwesterly, southeast and northwest. It blows from west to east. And that's the current and the wind that they wanted to ride all the way to North America, which meant that they landed on the west side of North America after many years in what they call the wilderness. The family's name, the patriarch of the family's name was Lehi, L-E-H-I, and he had sons, Laman, Lemuel, and Nephi, three sons. But they did not have wives. And so it was that another family with women as their daughters traveled with them and became the wives of these three sons. Eventually there was a younger son as well. But they traveled through the wilderness. They took their pedigrees and their records and some of their scriptures with them. And it was written in Aramaic. There have been Aramaic artifacts. Aramaic was if my understanding is correct, the language that they used, and that it was a result of the captivity that happened in Egypt. Their art was clearly influenced by that which was Egyptian. Here in Oregon, the state is divided from Idaho by the Snake River. The Snake River has skulls, stone skulls that can be found there. It's illegal to just pick them up and keep them unless you've had them for 30 years or some such thing. But the skulls are an anomaly. They don't know what to make of it because it is partially a Mayan-looking. Now, remember, these people spread across the land and eventually also lived in the area of the Yucatan and over hundreds of years. This happened roughly around 600 B.C. that Nebuchadnezzar abducted the Judeans, and it was right before that the family of Lehi left. So a few years later, who knows how many years, but they eventually made it to the promised land, North America. So my brothers and sisters, it is said that these skulls are half Egyptian, half Mayan, and so they don't know what to make of them. The people spread across this land, and by 300 A.D., there were cities like Los Angeles where it is said that if you stood in the middle of the city on a high rise, you could not see the end of it. That's how numerous upon the land it was. But there was major and ongoing conflict. When they arrived on the land of North America, Laman and Lemuel, who really objected to the fact that all the prophetic abilities and all the sacred objects and the record keeping and so on was passed on to Nephi, their younger brother. And in fact, some miracles had to happen because on several occasions they wanted to do him harm, especially during the journey across the ocean where they rebelled against their father, and so did their wives, and they said, look, if you had just left us there, and of course they had no way of knowing that the father's prophecies, and he had a dream of that the prophecies did come true, and there had been massive slaughter and abduction and enslavement of their people and their countrymen. So they wanted to turn the ship around. They just wanted to go back. But eventually they did come here, and during 900 years spread prolifically across the land. But Laman and Lemuel intermarried their families with the tribal people of the land. As you can see, they came partially from Lemuria. The Apaches came from the Red Land, which is Atlantis. And one of the sacred objects that they had is actually red dirt that came from the land of Atlantis. And they had it in a clay pot. The red dirt was from the Red Land, and it was their sacred object for a long time, as well as a staff that came from Atlantis. I don't know where these objects are at this time. I could possibly look, but it's their business. It's not mine. But my brothers and sisters, that's where they came from. So this is the people that were encountered here when the people from the house of Israel made their way here. Now, as Laman and Lemuel started to interact and their ancestors intermarried with the darker, redder-skinned people here, they became known as the Lamanites. And this information that I am giving you is fully available to you if you wish. It is held by the Mormons as the Book of Mormon. Another set of records that the Mormons have that is well worth reading is out of their Pearl of Great Price. It is the records of the Book of Abraham and the Book of Moses, which is very, very fascinating information about Moses and so on. It elaborates the information to some extent, because it's tainted by filters, but to some extent it collaborates the information that I've given you from the history keepers of our cosmos in the book, The Gift of the Unicorns. The whole second half of that book is the history of the cycles of life and how the Earth did not originate in this place in space. So, my brothers and sisters, how did the Mormons get these records? Well, I'll tell you in a moment, but let's just take a quick commercial break.
After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Elmine experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Elmine's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Elmine's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Windows into Eternity, Revelations of the Mother Goddess, is now available from Elmine. This book provides unparalleled insight into ancient mysteries. Elmine, an internationally recognized mystic and teacher, reveals the hidden laws of existence, transcending reason, delivering visionary expansion. This metaphysical masterpiece explores the origins of life as recorded in the holy libraries. The release of information from these ancient libraries is a priceless gift to humankind. The illusions found in the building blocks of existence are exposed, as are the purposes of creation. To receive your copy of Windows into Eternity, Revelations of the Mother Goddess, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
So my brothers and sisters, if there were that numerous a people, and understand that they had very sophisticated cities. In fact, the records are quite clear. The two questions are, how did the Mormons get those records? And number two question is, how did Joseph Smith translate it? And of course, the biggie, where are the cities today? So let's start by answering the issue of how Joseph Smith got these records. There was a huge massacre that happened around 300 AD. That was what they call an ethnic cleansing, a very nice little name for a horrible event, in which not only in North America, but in South America as well, the battles continued day and night. Now, they have found breastplates for women, armor for women, you know, that clearly indicate where the breasts go and so on. In South America, this is archaeologists. They have also found toy horses in Americas, because the battles took place on horseback. And it is said that the horses came across with Columbus, that there weren't horses here before, and so therefore, you know, these records can't possibly be accurate. But they have found ancient pre-Columbian horse images in Mesoamerica. So The other thing that has been discovered down there is that there actually is armor for children. It got so bad that the children and the women were killed. They had to fight for their lives. Everyone, according to the records, when it was the last stand of the white race upon this continent, everyone had to fight. Their prophet, their history keeper, their leader, also military-wise, was Moroni and Mormon. And what happened is that they had in what's currently New York State, the hill Palmyra in New York State is an riddled. It is owned by the Mormon Church. They know exactly, you know, that it's underneath the hill, but it is riddled with chambers of records that pertain to the history, because it was very carefully kept, plus the original history to preserve their language. That was one of the, they went to great peril to get these records, to bring it with them when they escaped as two families to North America. All these things are in the hill, Palmyra, in New York. And so the records, there was a set of the records because he lay, as he said in the records, in a hollow of a rock. On top of a rock, there was a hollow, which he lay in and escaped the indigenous people, if you will, you know, after 900 years, who's indigenous and who's not, but the red-skinned people, what they called the Lamanites, from totally destroying him. He wrote there, and he spent his days and nights abridging some of the records into what is today the Book of Mormon. He then hid them with a very specific thing that enabled the translation of those records by a young boy named Joseph Smith. He was only 14 years old when he first was contacted by the being. He calls it the angel, but an angel is not the same thing as a spirit. It was the spirit of Moroni that contacted him. Angel is a whole different evolutionary line. It's not somebody that died and then is very luminous when you see them. So, my brothers and sisters, the spirit of Moroni returned. He showed him exactly where everything was buried. He had to go there several times. He received visions there. He had to go there several times, and then finally he was permitted to take it out. The Nephites of old, if you read in the first few books of the Bible, you will find that they used what's called a Urim and Thummim. Now, I have carefully discussed what a Urim and Thummim is in the book, The Gift of the Unicorns, and also the subsequent book, which is The Revelations of Isis, which is called Opening the Doors of Heaven. I've also translated the rest of a record that Joseph Smith only partially translated, then said he was not permitted to translate the rest, and he left the challenge to say, he who could translate it, let him try. Thinking possibly nobody would ever translate it, I don't know, but I did. And when I did The Gift of the Unicorns, I was only permitted to translate a bit more myself. Then, by the time I was writing the Opening the Doors of Heaven, which is a translation of records that I did from the libraries of Isis, I was permitted to translate the rest of it. So the Urim and Thummim is a seer stone. The Nephites wore the seer stone over their breast as a breastplate with crystals. There's multiple mentions of it in the book of Genesis, Leviticus, Numbers, Exodus. I don't know if it is in the book of Judges, but certainly the Pentateuch, which are the first five books of the Bible, have plenty of mentions of Urim and Thummim. My brothers and sisters, in the world of mystics in which my life has lived, one of the most sought-after things to have is a seer stone. And a seer stone, for the first time, we reveal the exact methods of methadone was given to me as part of a college course that will begin the 1st of September. And it's by the Academy of Alchemy. And there it tells you how to do two things. First of all, how to create your own seer stone. Now, normally the seer stones, and I've taken a little look at where there are seer stones because I was given one some years ago, which I used for a while, and then I no longer needed it because the second thing that you can do is to become a seer stone. Your pituitary gland becomes the seer stone. And the crystals in the brain become like a seer stone, and at that point you don't really need to use a physical external object. But for many years I used that seer stone. There is one in the records chamber in Ayers Rock in Australia that I've seen. There's one in Peru, and it's held by people that don't know how to use it. And then there is one in a cave with golden mummies in it, the gold plate over the mummies, that is part of the Tibetan hidden library. And let me just see if there was another one. There is another one. And it's in Ethiopia. So my brothers and sisters, these seer stones, when you read through them, you can read any language. You can, if you want a question answered, you can see through them and you can see what it is you need to see. When you become the seer stone, you can automatically do that. So Joseph Smith was given in this little shallow place where this abridged records for him to translate, he was given a Urim and Thummim, a seer stone. Currently, in my classes, there are several of the masters that have become oracles that are translating at the level that Joseph Smith was able to translate. They have become seer stones. And they are every day able to receive, to translate, to move back and forth between these halls of records and so on with me by themselves. He was an extraordinary prophet. There is no two ways about it. But, of course, he had the ability to see the spirit. That makes him extraordinary. But the translation, not only of that, but also of the other records, which gives the history of the North American people and the eventual slaughter of the white people, and is very, very valuable. And it is unfortunate that it's only the Mormons that know about it. This is one of the reasons I am sharing this with you. Plus, there's additional information that they don't know. So, my brothers and sisters, where are the cities? Let's go back to the Star of Bethlehem. The Star of Bethlehem was, in fact, a planet written about in our Sumerian records. Now, Sumer is an anomaly. And, by the way, Sumeria and Akkad was one land. Akkad, the word ad means place. Like, you know, there was a time when the earth was in such a state where she was so heated up that life on the surface was not habitable, and she was called Bad, B-A-D, from which the word bad comes. Bad means non-life enhancing place. So the word Akkad means low place, wet place, marshy place. Sumer was the highlands of Sumeria. Akkad was simply the low, marshy area of Sumeria. I know that historians regard it currently as two completely separate lands, but not so. It was one nation. Sumeria rose out of nowhere. One moment they didn't know the history of the world, and the next, here was Sumeria. And we'll see why that is in a little bit, but the bottom line of it is I was going to tell you something about the Sumerians. Oh my goodness, I forget, so this is a very, very good time for us to take a break. Sorry, my love, this is the problem when there's so much information running through my head and my mouth is like a bottleneck at times, so let's take a quick break and then I'll be right back.
The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Almeen has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
The Way of the Toltec Nagual, New Precepts for the Spiritual Warrior, is now available from Almeen. Not only is this wisdom-packed book a guide for serious students of the Toltec Way, but also a font of knowledge for all truth-seekers. Mapping out the revolutionary changes in Toltec mysticism, it presents the precepts of mastery sought out by all who travel the road of illumination and spiritual warriorship. Almeen reveals publicly, for the first time, the ancient power symbols used by Toltec Nahuals to assist in obtaining freedom from illusion. This book also features information about the hidden planets used by the Toltecs and the astrology of Isis. The Way of the Toltec Nahual, New Precepts for the Spiritual Warrior, is now available in paperback or as an electronic download or as an audiobook spoken by Almeen. To receive your copy, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almeen at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Aha, I have remembered what I was going to say about Sumeria, my brothers and sisters, but before I go there, let me just make sure that I got this point across. So the 1st of July, we start the Institute for Applied Mysticism. It teaches you the connection of the Egyptian gods, the gods of the inner earth, how they have tampered in the affairs of mankind, how they were able to maintain their immortality. But most of all, it prepares the participants for their own immortality and eventual incorruptibility. There's 3 months of preparation for this huge transition in your life that this guides you through. On the 1st of September, we start the 3-month course of the Academy of Alchemy, and it will, amongst many other incredible tools that it provides you and teachings that it will give and inner changes that it will promote, it will give you how to create a seer stone, and then by the 3rd month you will learn how to become a seer stone. So there is that. And then, as I said, the 1st of November, we start in with the secrets of humanity. And this is the Institute for the Study of Human Potential out of Singapore. If you get yourself on our email list, we will notify you when these things take place. Some of their websites are not even quite erected yet. Once you have graduated from one of these colleges, you become part of their alumni, and you can always participate in their virtual lounge as an alumni member with other students that are participating in the course. This virtual lounge is an answer to many asking us for more depth in our forum discussions and, you know, this is the way to get it. So Sumerian records indicate that a race called the Anunnaki from the planet Nibiru settled here on Earth. Now, this happened approximately 180,000 years ago. The 180,000 years ago was 20,000 years after the Earth had a massive devastation, and most of its population was still living in the inner Earth when they arrived. When they arrived, they didn't see much population of anything. Later on, some of the inhabitants from the inner Earth came out onto the crust of the Earth, found here that the Anunnaki in Sumeria had erected a civilization. Well, that's why Sumeria springs up out of nowhere in the history. The cataclysm of 200,000 years ago erased that history. 180,000 years ago, the Anunnaki from the planet Nibiru arrived and began the Sumerian culture. Now, my brothers and sisters, the Sumerian records indicate that Nibiru, the planet Nibiru, comes here every 3,600 years in an elliptical orbit that only goes to the other side of Mars. And in the book, The Gift of the Unicorns, you can read how the Earth at one time was on the other side of Mars. It had been, it had arrived there from another star system. It was known as Tiamat, which in the ancient languages of the Earth means Tia, means eternal, and mother is Ma, or Mater, mother. And so Tiamat was the name of the planet, the eternal mother. It's no accident that she was called that, because the Earth is literally, in all the records that I have seen, and there are multiple that have pointed out, that the Earth and humanity is the cradle of cosmic civilization. So Eternal Mother, the Earth, was on the other side and two-thirds larger than what we currently have. In other words, we're one-third, I should maybe say twice larger, because we're one-third and it was three-thirds at that point. The Nibiruan planet came and found that in the place of its orbit there now was a planet. They just did the quick way out. They are very warlike beings. They shot the Earth out of place, out of her orbit. Two-thirds of her broke up along with one of the moons of Mars and became the asteroid belt. The Earth spun out into this orbit that she currently is in, which is why she is the only planet in our solar system that spins a certain way. They all spin the other way, because it's an artificial way that she is spinning around her own axis, because of the way she was shot out of orbit. The Anunnaki's planet, Nibiru, is the star of Bethlehem. 2,000 years ago, the star of Bethlehem arrived here, causing huge cataclysms on the land. Now, there was a prophet called Samuel, and he walked on the walls of the cities. There were huge walled cities, prophesying day and night. They tried to shoot him down with bows and arrows, but they never could hit him. This is a shamanic practice that is also done, like at Wounded Knee. The Native American chiefs would walk right into the bullets and open their shirts in defiance, and the bullets couldn't hit them. This is a shamanic technique, my brothers and sisters, that can be done by making the, and I used to teach this, actually, because I worked more in shamanism before my calling to do this work. But I used to teach how that could be done by making a field around the body that's dense enough that the bullets flatten against the field and fall harmlessly to the ground. Geronimo had that ability, and he could not be hit by bullets. So Samuel was saying to them, there's huge cataclysms coming. you must repent, because at that time life had become very, very materialistic and very, as he called it, wicked upon the land of North America, with massive cities all over. Now, Christ was crucified around the time that these big earthquakes happened. They were felt all around the earth. It's when the Nibiru came the closest. The Bethlehem Star came the closest to earth. The place that felt it the most was North America. The mountains shot up, huge valleys were covered by mountains. Cities lie buried under the sands of America, my brothers and sisters, and in the ocean, on shelves where currently water is. The Mexican Gulf, there's a city that lies buried under the ocean. Death Valley, you know, it's one of the hottest places on earth, so be sure if you go look for this that you're well equipped, because Death Valley has a huge and phenomenal city underneath the sands. And interestingly enough, it has golden mummies in it. I've seen it from the top as I flew over it with an airplane. I could see right through the land. It had aqueducts. It was very highly developed. It possibly is the city called Zarahemla in the Book of Mormon, which was covered. And a huge mountain fell upon it, and it was no more. There is, on the one edge of the valley, there is like a canyon that used to be a river. And in that canyon, there's an opening that used to be the outlet of the aqueduct. When I see it the way it was, I see that boats were moored there. But the aqueduct was drainage that went into the river. You can, in fact, go under this Death Valley. It's very dangerous for multiple reasons, also because of surveillance things, government-oriented, that's not far away. However, the cities are ruined. It is said that it was so thick with dust that just like in the time of the big Japanese earthquake, they couldn't light a candle because the dust was too thick in the air. So it was dark, the sun was darkened, the moon was darkened, the dust in the air was so thick, it was night for 3 days, according to their records. It was 300 years after this. Life was more rural, that the attack happened on the white race. Two little remnants that I know of have survived, a little white race that live up near Connecticut, that have conclusively proved that they are pre-Columbian and therefore entitled to tribal status. They have also found in the Amazon jungles a little white race, not albinos, a white race. A little tiny tribe. These are remnants of those that escaped this genocide. The genocide was returned by the whites upon the red race, very unfortunately, as whites yet again massacred the Indian people, and karma came full circle. My brothers and sisters, it's been a joy to be with you this day, and we'll talk again another day. Thank you.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almaine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Almeen. Please join us again next week.